is Southside.
And also hearty greetings to, obviously, our sirenonline.co.uk listeners for Siren 107.3 FM in the Lincoln region. Fantastic to actually be able to welcome the next guest to the airwaves, because in many ways he is Mr. Guinness World Records. He is the editor-in-chief, a marvellous, overall wonderful individual that is Craig Glendy. Are you indeed there, Craig?
I am, yeah, thank you.
Wonderful. Delighted to touch base with your good self. Had a few challenges, telephonically speaking, but never mind, we got together in the end. That's the most important thing, which is fantastic. Now, ever since the days of Norris McVurter and a whole range of other factors, etc., clearly people are saying, go for this Guinness World Record, etc., sort the whole thing through, etc. In musical radio terms, of course, there seems to be a whole stack of records that are going through the system. Chris Miles, of course, doing his world record achievement recently. Lady Gaga, I notice, is on the front page now for all manner of tweets, etc. But the thing about world records, etc., and setting the record is, actually, once the record's set, that's always going to be a first, isn't it, really?
There's always a first time, I guess, for every record, naturally, that comes in. So, it's a category we do monitor, but we're quite careful to... If the record is actually for being the first of some kind, then we only accept firsts that we consider within that subject area to be significant.
Indeed.
So, obviously, first man on the moon.
Yes,
it's quite important, but there's lots of other firsts that we don't accept.
Precisely, first time married, for instance. That's hardly going to be a world record. It might be important in somebody's life, but it's not going to work really. So, it's important to sort of address these kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, the important thing to realise, of course, is that we do actually reject, I mean, about 90% of what we get on the whole, for various reasons, because it's too daft or too dangerous or just not impressive enough. So there's a sort of a misconception a bit that we accept anything these days, and that's sometimes levelled at me that you guys all accept any record, but in fact we're very careful to be sure that what we're approving is accurate and interesting and relevant, and we say we reject about 90%. So
it's a really crucial point you raise there in terms of standards, because I know one of our regular contributors is Richard Fitzsimons, and Fitzwilliams, I should say, and Richard was editor-in-chief of the International Who's Who for many a year, and equally in the same way, as obviously you could say, well, who's in Who's Who, what's the selection criteria, and that's ultimately it really, because otherwise you would get the accusation of, well, standards are slipping. I mean, you've introduced somebody there who's actually sort of set up a record for I don't know, juggling keys or something, but that's not probably a very significant thing, depending on the kind of key, etc. How did you get involved with the organisation yourself? I mean, was it something that you always had a fondness for as a child? Was it something you always said, this is what I want to be?
Oh, yeah, man. As a kid, I loved the book. It was one of these great joys, isn't it, to get the Guinness Book of Records for Christmas, and I can never imagine that I would one day be working on it, but I just, all through my life, really, even as an adult, I've really got a buzz and thrill from finding out, particularly the kind of the more weird and unusual superlatives, you know, the sort of stranger side of life. And then, as an adult, I had the chance to, I studied publishing as a degree course at university, and spent many years in the development of magazines and books, which means that you touch on many, many subjects. So over my career, I've done hundreds of different subjects, so I know very little about a lot of things. My shallow knowledge of many subjects is certainly in a very good trajectory, really, for Guinness World Records.
You could be defined, Craig, as a Renaissance man for the 21st century. It's a different line entirely, having that sort of general breadth and versatility of knowledge and so on. I have to ask you, is there a particular favourite or quirky record that you think, I like that, you know, that was really good?
Oh, I mean, there's so many. And I said the record's a bit like children, and you sort of love them all. But a quirky one, for example, is something like the most successful chimpanzee on Wall Street, which is a record. I love the idea that to try and make money on Wall Street, someone actually hired a chimpanzee to throw darts at stocks on a board. And the chimp ended up being, I think it was the 22nd most successful trader in the USA that year, because the random selections it made. Now, that kind of thing, I think, really appeals to me, because it is measurable. In the one sense, you can measure how much the chimp is made. And it's fun and it's interesting, and it makes kind of an otherwise dull subject a bit more interesting. You know, how do you make politics interesting? Well, you find things like, the first animal to be elected mayor of a village or something. You know, there are ways of doing this that help kids engage with reading and with fact collecting and just, you know, enjoying the job.
I mean, you make a really interesting point there in terms of using these quirky aspects to really act as a way in and a conduit. Although I must admit, if George Osborne is listening to this as Chancellor of the Exchequer, I'm not sure whether using a chimp to actually deal with predictions of the economy is necessarily the best way forward. I just put that out as a kind of disclaimer, actually, Craig, because you never know. People might just take it seriously. Well, yeah, and I'm sure there'll be some wag out there who would turn around and say, what, you mean we haven't been being run by monkeys for the last few years? I don't know. Still, that's a by the by. If folk are actually looking to run this sort of thing, and they've got an idea, as you said, obviously there's certain criteria that there, and clearly they need to have it authenticated because people can say, well, I did this, I did so-and-so, but you do need to go through a fairly rigorous procedure in terms of presumably having somebody on hand who's a deputised, authorised person from the Guinness Record Association to actually say, yeah, that's okay, we confirm it. Otherwise people would say, well, I actually did run the 2-minute mile and just there was nobody there to actually catch it.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, what we get now about 1,000 claims into the office every week. So you can imagine this, the huge task of having to deal with this. Mm. And luckily, we always say to people, contact us first through the website, because that's the main route in to establishing a record, that's guinnessworldrecords.com. And we can instantly reject, you know, quite a good chunk of records based on just the title alone or the suggestion of what you want to do. Those that do make it through that process, if we can't be there in person because it's still that's still in the many hundreds, then what we allow you to do is for you to put the onus on you as the record claimant to find someone in your community who we'd be deemed trustworthy, like a policeman or a teacher or a doctor or a judge, or sometimes we do insist on having a legal representative or an actuary to authenticate the event. We ask that you video record it, that you photograph it, that it's done in a public space, signed witness statements from people who are independent, which we then follow up. All this is to help us just build a body of evidence that you've done what you've done. Of course, if you've walked around the world, there's no way we're going to follow you around to prove that you've done that. So then we ask for certain evidence like GPS readings, credit card statements from various points. You know, we caught someone out once by going through the credit card bill. And you can see they went from point A to point B. You know, used a credit card at one point and then at another. And that the only way you could get from A to B is by flying. Mm. So there's no way you could have made that journey on foot, so that's how you catch people out. So there are many ways, and we're quite attuned to how people might try and trick us. So we do allow you to send in evidence.
It's a bit like having to sort out students for poor scholarship or plagiarism or other issues relating to that side of things, or equivalent, you might say, to actually making sure that your work is peer-reviewed, as opposed to actually saying, well, yeah, actually, it does it because it says it goes there from that point of view. When you actually come to certain issues, I mean, cite the Lady Gaga setup as a routine, presumably on that basis it's fairly straightforward that you can actually say, well, there are a number of tweets, there are a number of followers, fine, they've crossed a certain figure, fine, she's now the most followed person on Twitter or whatever from that point of view. Or in the case of, say, the aforementioned Mr. Moyles, you know, he was broadcasting for his 37, 52, whatever hours that he was actually working through. Similarly, you're looking at that. Do you find that broadcasters also tend to utilise this as partly a publicity stunt, dare I say it? Not just broadcasters, of course. It is one of those things where you say, oh, great, we can get onto the GuinnessWorldRecords.com and then we can get some publicity as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always happened, really. I mean, events need to have sponsors, and so we get a lot of pressure to mention sponsors in the book, which we're not that keen on.
Sure.
And people do, I mean, why do people want to break records in the first place? You have to sort of, the fundamental question is they want a bit of attention and to be recognised. And what you find these days is that a lot of the events are now so enormous, it's like mass participation events, that they have to be organised at sort of a corporate level. So you get companies that will create a record attempt to draw attention to their product, for example. And what we have to do is we have to treat each record on its merit individually. So if they have done that, then they have done that. Even if it is a publicity stunt, it's still a fact that they have achieved this record. So we do acknowledge it.
Have you ever been tempted to actually put in a bid for longest-serving editor-in-chief of the Guinness Book of World Records? So I should be in there, you know. Yes, this is what I'm going for. Yeah. This is the whole key thing.
I'd love to, but I've got to beat Norris. I think Norris McWhirter, as you mentioned at the beginning, I think he served for, well, he, I mean, in a full-time capacity for more than 30 years, and then he went into sort of semi-retirement, and allow his other editors to run the book under his supervision. So I've got a good few, probably 40 years, so another 50 years to go.
Easy peasy, Craig.
Yeah, I hope, anyway.
Because, you know, it could be crucial that, I mean, failing that, you might decide, you know, no, I want to go for various other routines, etc., which is, I suppose, could it be gamekeeper turned poacher, really, saying, right, I think I can do that, I'll take that one, let's take that on board. It's fantastic stuff. Presumably, it's almost like a joy to be editor-in-chief of a team who clearly, as you rightly said, you've got investigators, you've got a whole range of folk that are actually feeding stuff into that point of view. Is it still a fun environment to be in, or at times do you feel, oh, it's just like the civil service, just going through form after form?
Well, I get the more fun end of the job, I guess, because I don't, I get to cherry-pick all the best stuff once it's gone through the system. So other team have to go through. There's a team, the records management team, and their job is to sift through all the emails and all the phone calls and check all the evidence. So I trust them to do the job, and then I just choose the best stuff for the book. I guess the tricky part of that is having to decide who gets in the book and who doesn't. Because even if you get a world record, this is a thing that not many people realise, is that even if you do get your Guinness World Records certificate, that doesn't guarantee you a place in the book, because
absolutely,
the book only has room for the best of the best, really, I think.
And I do know, though, without giving too much away, because I know there are various other sort of interesting factors that are coming through with this, that there's rumours about setting somebody out, having a record for actually doing Jim Reeves songs and singing whilst actually in a lifeboat going up and down the northeast coast, which could be quite interesting. But, you know, who knows? We might well be covering that. So I say that as a teaser, which we'll be working through that. It's a different line entirely from my point of view. And, I mean, from that, is there that notion that sometimes, I mean, you mentioned this earlier with respect to booking people and saying it's there or not, that sometimes you get folk with quaint British eccentricities being what they are, quaint British eccentricities where you think, you must be absolutely out of your mind to do this. It's insane. You need help.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I mean, and not just British. You get to learn, it's like working for the UN, I guess. You get to realise all the different countries with different personality types and well, to some extent stereotypes, which are, you know, that are actually true. So.
Yeah. But, well, we won't go there, because obviously we don't want to get in our legal teams, and who knows what could be happening from that point of view. So, you know, the United Nations has enough challenges as it is, really, without going down that line. Craig, it's been fantastic just getting a flavour, just a smidgen of the whole fantastic work that you actually do. A reminder, of course, that it's guinnessworldrecords.com to be the go-to place as far as the web is concerned. Plus, of course, as you said, the annual fantastic production of the Guinness Book of Records. We've got two final questions for your good self. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today here on the Midweek Drive and also Siren FM?
Yeah. It was a good, nice set of questions, actually. Yeah, I've done this I tend to do this in September when the book launches, so it's nice to have a little break and do it now. So,
well,
yeah.
You see, there we are, just ahead of book festivals and all manner of other wonderful bits and pieces as well. So the next crucial question is, could we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future, possibly again ahead of September, and just sort of keep us, not necessarily updated, but keep us appraised of how things are progressing in the fabulous world of the Guinness World Records?
Indeed, yeah, I'd love to come back, actually, yes. In fact, the perfect time would be September, yeah. We'll give you some insights into the new book, advanced information, perhaps.
I think that'll be a definite date, and if we've coordinated after a few sort of interesting challenges with the whole thing, we will be there from that point of view. Craig Glendy, Editor-in-Chief, of course, of the Guinness Book of Records, we salute you. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you very much.